and welcome to Live Deliciously, the official unofficial A24 bracket podcast. Today we've got a somewhat irregular episode because we are not going to be, well, for a few reasons. One of them, we're not going to be pitting two movies against each other. We're just going to be talking about one movie and our experience of watching that movie. And B, did I say A and B? I don't remember. The other reason is because it's just half of us here today. It's just the classics. It's you and me, D.
And C, we're really just going to be talking about some A24 movies that have come out since the start of this podcast. And
yeah,
kind of just want to do some one-offs and kind of talk about some of the dope movies that are coming out. And today we're going to be talking about After Sun.
That's right. We are going to be talking about After Sun, written and directed by Charlotte Wells. It is her feature length debut. Believe she had some shorts that had won quite a few awards before this one, but this is her first feature film, starring everyone's favorite Paul Mescal, as well as Frankie Corio, who is a fantastic child actress that I'm sure we'll talk about shortly, as well as Celia Rolson Hall, in a much less scene. It's really Paul and Frankie that we see for 90% of the movie, and we get a little bit of Celia Rolson Hall, who plays the older Sophie. Speaking of the After Sun, Sophie reflects on the shared joy and private melancholy of a holiday she took with her father 20 years earlier. Memories real and imagined fill the gaps between as she tries to reconcile the father she knew with the man she didn't. And that's After Sun. It came out late last year, I believe, late in 2022. And I don't know about you, but I just saw it for the very first time last night, actually.
And I finished it today.
Yeah.
After the movie wrapped, I was telling you earlier, I was not okay. I needed a hug.
How are you feeling now?
I am feeling like I watched something very intimate, mm-hmm, and a really beautiful experience of a film. And I'm still kind of just processing.
Yeah.
Like a lot of like the beautiful imagery and just the content and the story of the film. But it was an experience.
Yeah. I thought this movie was fantastic. One of the best movies I've seen in a while. I didn't read up on the movie beforehand, but I did look into kind of like what it was, and I'm glad that I did, because more and more, and this is something we could potentially talk about in a side conversation, but more and more I think I appreciate coming into a piece of media, whether it be a movie, a game, a book, a TV show, whatever. I like coming in with like a degree of knowing what I should be expecting, because for me, it helps me experience it rather than kind of like sitting around waiting to see what's going to happen. It's better to kind of like know what's going to happen and just be able to experience it for what it is. So I had seen this movie described as quietly devastating. And I'd also seen the summary that I just read off where it talks about memories real and imagined, which is something that is not explicit in the film itself. The movie, I don't think we can, maybe, I don't know if you agree, I don't think the movie goes out of its way to make it explicit that like some of these memories are imagined. I think it makes sense in the context of the film. I think it's accurate, but having that on my mind going into the film really set me up for, I just had a really good time watching this movie, including the end of the movie, which, you know, squeezed the pulp out of me. It was very sad. It is truly quietly devastating. Not even that quiet, honestly. It's pretty devastating.
Absolutely devastating. And I went into this movie cold, so I had no idea what was like going on. And
oh,
so as the experience was happening, I was all trying to piece it together. And when you just noted that some of the memories were like actually like imagined, I am now reflecting back and it makes sense,
mm-hmm,
especially when thinking about like the narrator and like her experience, especially being like a raven at some points, like seeing her father there. And like seeing as how like that brings back memories, especially through like the act of dancing,
mm-hmm,
it makes sense as like if that's happening in present time and how that would happen on how she reflects and thinks about her memories when she was a kid. And I mean, that's what we all do, though. We all really don't remember things the way we do. There's obviously a lot of biases in like the ways that like our emotions actually kind of shift and turn like our memories of a particular events or the people that we think that we know.
Yeah, I thought that aspect of it was really interesting. This movie was just a really interesting movie. I mean, for a directorial debut, like what a tour de force. I mean, like such a good movie. And maybe in a little while I can read some of the I read a really good interview The Guardian did with Charlotte Wells about the movie, because I was curious about what amount of autobiographical it was, which I do have the answer for that as well, or at least somewhat. And hearing her talk about her process, was she seems like she's just really, really dialed in, really sharp. I'm very impressed, and I will be very interested to see what kind of work she has moving forward, because I think she's someone to watch.
Yeah, it was absolutely dynamite, and I'm really excited to see what she is going to do going forward. I was just so impressed by the handle of, like, just how the whole film was, like, kind of, like, shot all throughout, as well as, like, the delicate, like, story and, like, just really amazing performances by both actors. And there was just so much, like, nuance and, like, a lot of, like, pain and happiness and just, like, a lot of emotions that, like, were just, like, coming through in each, like, thread and beat throughout the film.
Yeah. Absolutely. I think let's jump into it kind of in the way that some of the way that we analyze our other films, and let's start talking about aesthetics, because that'll be good. We don't need to necessarily talk about any spoilers before we get into talking about content. And if you look at my notes on this movie, like, we always try to take notes, or at least I always try to take notes based on a rubric that Sarah had come up with, where we've got like aesthetics, we've got performance, and we've got content, and some subcategories there as well. But I tend to just focus on the three big ones. And my notes are like 75% aesthetics, because this movie has a hell of a style to it. I mean, obviously the first thing jumped out at me is the opening, kind of credits that have the tape, the VHSs being forwarded and rewound, like, even during the opening credits, and like some of the produced by or whatever, we're already hearing the sound of a VHS being rewound and fast forwarded. Yeah, which kind of a side note, like, I was watching that, I was like, do you think Gen Z is gonna even know what that sound is?
Probably not. Right. I mean, they'll hear it from like movies or like other forms of media, yeah. I'm sure. Especially if it's like kind of a period piece, but it's not going to resonate in the same way if, like, as people, like, grew up with it.
Yeah. Like, I feel like we were definitely the last generation to experience, like, tape media. Like, I have memories of, like, rewinding VHSs as a kid. Do you?
I do. Yeah. I have definitely memories of, like, just buying VHSs and having collections and, like, having some, like, my favorite ones to go through. Like, when I was a kid, Matilda was my shit.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I think I had the first Austin Powers movie and maybe the first Harry Potter. I mean, I had more VHSs than that, but those are the two that I like specifically remember watching as a kid. But yeah, that's just, it's such a like visceral, like material, tactile. I don't know how to describe it, but like, it's like tapes were like, it's a physical media, you know? I mean, a DVD is physical media too, but like there's like mechanical aspects of a tape that are happening.
I mean, if something was watched recently, you would have to actually get up, put it in the VCR, and you would have to rewind it if it wasn't rewound already.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember, how long would it generally take? Like, if it was like an hour and a half movie, that would maybe take what, like, probably like a couple minutes for it to kind of rewind all the way back?
It was full minutes. And also, I don't know if you remember this, but like, you could turn the things in a VHS yourself, because it's just a physical wheel that the machine would twist. Did you ever like put your thumb or your finger into like the little like holes in the back of the VHS, and you could turn them, I guess, counterclockwise to rewind?
I mean, I would do that just to fuck around with it.
Yeah.
But you would actually rewind full movies with your finger? Oh, I was like, wow, okay.
Not like the whole way, but like I would do that, and like it would rewind the movie. You know what I mean? Like if you eject the, for any gen, I'm sure any Gen Z listeners we have are just like, shut the fuck up about VHSs, you old ass motherfuckers. By the way, happy late birthday. D is now 30 as well. He's joined the old people club with me.
Yeah, I'm pretty old and I'm loving it, you know? It feels like I was just like 29.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hairline's receding a little bit more.
You keep saying that. I don't see it. You look great.
I got an M. I got a full-on M on my head.
You're like Vegeta. That's cool. That's dope.
You know, it's funny. I was on the toilet last night and I was just on YouTube and I was watching Dragon Ball Z clips of just like funny Vegeta moments. Who knew that this would
Would come up, yeah.
All right, this is getting its lore of the week vibes.
Yeah. Right. So that whole like VHS thing kind of continues throughout the movie, which is cool. And I thought it was cool that the movie started with it. But what I really wanted to talk about was some of the opening scenes when we finally, like, the resolution like finally clears up and we're actually watching. Because many scenes in this movie, especially in the beginning, are like, we are seeing like old ass VHS tapes, and then eventually it resolves into like full, you know, definition. A lot of scenes in this movie are like so vibrant, like a lot of really deep reds, a lot of yellows and reds, and then, but also like greens as well, like a lot of contrast going on, especially during the daytime that they are hanging out at this resort. It's a father and his daughter are hanging out in a resort, and I believe Turkey.
Yeah, it was Turkey.
And what I believe is probably the 90s. And it's like really like breathtakingly beautiful shots. Like there's a shot early on, I don't know if you remember, they get to the resort or the hotel like kind of late. And so they have to wait around in the reception room for someone to like actually wake up and let them in. And there's just this shot. Sophie is like laying on this bench while her dad stands there at the counter, like in the background and in the foreground of Sophie. And it's just this like kitschy room with a lot of different things. Like there's like stuff on the wall and there's like all these different lamps. And it's just like, it was a beautiful shot. I just thought the cinematography of it, and all the different colors is something that, I really appreciate.
It's a really warm and like, welcoming like color palette throughout the film.
Yeah.
And some of the shots also just feel very intimate, like you're in the room mm-hmm. with them. And some of my favorite ones would be whether it was Callum or Sophie sleeping on the bed, but like the overshots over their body, and you could see what the other person was doing as they were trying to be delicate in the room to not make sure that they would wake the other person.
Yeah.
And that was some of like my favorite shots within the room, because normally they would do really like creative things, especially with like adding some texture or barriers with like the sliding door, or mm-hmm. if they're in the room themselves, how is it that between like the VCR and like the camcorder that's connected to, or like connected to the TV, you see them recording each other, but then there's also little bits that you can see of the room through the mirror. I mean, it was just brilliantly set up, especially even in small intimate spaces that's not even showcasing the like Turkey in the background or the resort.
Yeah, I mean, there are beautiful shots of Turkey, but it's a lot of just beautiful shots of this hotel that could basically be anywhere. Like, I wasn't sure that it was in Turkey. I think if I'd been paying closer attention from the beginning, I would have known. But it wasn't until later on when they took a day trip that I was like, oh, it's Turkey, because it's set on like the side of their bus or something. But I want to, a couple of things you just brought up that I want to talk about. One of them is that like kind of warm palette of colors that we get. And I don't know if you picked up on this or if you think this was a real phenomenon, but I feel like a lot of scenes, a lot of shots, especially during the day when they're hanging out in the resort by the pool, are vibrant and warm. And we do get some scenes in their hotel room that are vibrant and warm as well. But we also get a lot of scenes like at night in their hotel room where all of a sudden the palette is like, has just been really flattened out, and it's literally dark because it's nighttime, but also just everything's like a little more washed out. And I feel like kind of having that in mind, that idea of like, this is a lot of her memories, especially when they're not recording, right? Like we're kind of implicitly seeing things through adult Sophie's memories, right? And I just think it's really interesting that like in these scenes at night where we're getting a little bit more about her father's potential mental and emotional state, memories that she maybe has that are not as happy, the color palette itself reflects that. And I thought that was a really cool, subtle way of showing us that like this is painted by her memory. And I was just really struck by that. And we would have like flash, like jump cuts as well. Like it would be this weird, eerie almost vibe of them in the hotel room at night. And her dad is doing things like he has a cast at the beginning of the movie and he's like cutting the cast off in a way that seems really, he's not in a great place, you know?
Did he cut himself in that scene?
Really unclear. Addie picked up on the same thing as well, where it looked like he had blood coming off of him because he was cutting this cast off with like scissors. But I don't see any cuts on him, like, in later scenes.
Yeah, that was something I was kind of wondering about when I saw and wanted to ask you about that because I wasn't really sure how to interpret it or if I even saw what I knew what I was seeing, if there was, like, blood in there or not.
And I think that's partly because of how dark the scene is, right? And she doesn't know what he's doing in there because she didn't see. She was not looking. She's in another room and they're talking across because he's in the bathroom. She's in the regular room. So, like, if we follow the logic of the movie, she doesn't know what he did in there. Like anytime he's by himself, presumably that's her imagining what he was up to. And so I don't think that he cut himself because I don't think that we see any cuts on him. I think it's just him because we also don't find out how he hurt his wrist or his arm. He mentions he doesn't remember. We see him drinking throughout the movie. I think it's pretty clear that he probably hurt himself. What I feel like is he hurt himself in some instance where he was drinking a lot and acting out in a way that was, you know, indirect self-harm, basically. Yeah. But scenes like that where it's really dark and like quiet and just melancholy, and then there'll just be a flash cut to them hanging out of the pool, and it's like all of a sudden there's this like these sky blues in the pool and in the sky, and they're watching parasailers who have these like vibrant kites, and they're under these elaborate umbrellas that are like reds and yellow, and you know, like he's got a pina colada and this whatever, and all of a sudden the color palette is just like boom, bright again. And I just thought it was really cool how that shifted so like kind of rapidly back and forth.
It did. And I feel like also the narrative of the story fits it perfectly, because obviously when the vacation starts, everything's a lot more vibrant, because that's when like they're seeing each other after quite a while, since like obviously there's a co-parenting dynamic since the parents are separated.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely throughout the film, like a lot of those color palettes will start to turn dark as like things start to kind of unravel a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to see that there's like a lot of tension, not only between Calum and Sophie, but Calum certainly is also going through like waves of like, or like challenges with like his like mental health.
Yeah.
And I think the first time in the movie where, especially when it was like in a dark like bathroom and like Sophie was kind of like in like the side shot, like over on like in the other side of the room, she can't see him, but he's brushing his teeth, and as she's talking about how she's like, even after an amazing day, I'm starting to feel like down, and she's starting to kind of describe what like feelings of like depression would be like.
Yeah.
He just like spits right into like the mirror.
Yeah.
And toothpaste and all, and like the shot just like lingers on like this dripping toothpaste and spit coming down the mirror, which was just like really effective. And I felt like for me that was the first sign that like things are going to start to kind of get a little darker, and like they're going to unravel more as the vacation goes on.
Yeah, that was an interesting scene. Really great breakdown of by 11-year-old Sophie of what depression feels like from like a physical sense, where she's describing just like having a great day, but her body is just tired. I thought that was really interesting. Yeah, I also just really like, there's so many small moments in this movie that are just, we get to see the camera will linger. Like for one of them that really jumps out at me is they just had dinner like at poolside or something. We just kind of see them sitting there, and they're not like talking to each other, and they're both kind of like watching the entertainment, and the shot just lingers on that, and there's nothing happening in the scene. I just really enjoyed that, because like that's really what this movie is giving a lot of. It's like a very zoomed in experience of a little girl hanging out with her dad at a beach resort. There were little things. There's also them laying in the chairs by the pool, and Sophie's just watching these like parasailers or paragliders or whatever those, you know, people up in the sky and with like parachute things on. And we get a shot that like is very clearly like her actual, like what she's seeing. And you just see a parasail like way off in the distance. You can't really see, can't make out any details about them. And it follows that for just a couple seconds. And like, for me, that's just like, was really visceral, because I've definitely been on a beach vacation laying, you know, in a chair or on the beach itself and just like watching people up in the sky. I've never done parasailing or paragliding or whatever that shit is, but it just felt so true to life.
Yeah, especially from like her perspective and kind of the vibrancy and the way that she would like look over as like the resort and would like pick up on things. And whether it's that or looking over at teenagers,
yeah,
and kind of just being in like kind of mesmerized about like what it is on how like they're hanging out, or just capturing like really small moments that I think she's just trying to like process for like the first time in her life. Another one that like kind of stuck out to me is like when she was like looking at like the two guys who were making out.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably the first time that she probably saw something of that nature, especially in the resort and it being in the 90s. Like they were in a very secluded area where they obviously were doing it in secrecy. And that's,
yeah,
something that she like caught and like, like you said, shout out to like the child actor,
Frankie Corio.
Yeah. She knocked it out of the park.
She's so fucking good.
I mean, it was insane. So seeing her just process and take in these moments and just act with like just like so much like variety, like it was insane.
She's so good. Like, I don't know how to describe it, but like she is like 11 or 12, like an actual 11 or 12 year old girl playing an 11 year old girl. But she manages to like seem like an adult woman's memory of her 11-year-old self. I mean, and I'm sure part of this is the directing and the way that the camera frames her, but she just seems like so, I don't even know. She's so good.
You know, that's a really good point is the way that the film is written. It's probably Sophie remembering herself as a kid, but there's definitely a lot more maturity and nuance probably than actually how real Sophie would have probably acted in that moment.
Yeah. But at the same time, she also is acting like a kid. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it's an insane performance.
It's so good. It's really so good. She's also someone to watch, I think. Real quick, I just wanted to talk about, you kind of briefly talked about it, the framing of shots in the hotel room. The one that really blew me away was the interview scene where she's trying to, it's the scene that we get in the very beginning, the opening kind of credits. And then we rewind back to the beginning of the vacation, and then it's kind of in media res, and then we get to it again, where on camera, she's trying to interview her dad and ask him about what his 11th birthday was like, because she's 11 at the time. And we also find out that, like, his birthday is coming up too. I don't think it's her birthday at any point in the film, but she's trying to ask him about what his 11th birthday was like. It's one shot. It's facing the dresser with a mirror behind it, some books on it, and there's a TV. And the camcorder that they have is plugged into the TV. And so at the beginning of the scene, she has the camcorder on, and she's filming her dad asking these questions. And he's like, he doesn't want to answer them on camera. And he's basically like, come on, Soph, like, I don't, you know, basically telling her to turn the camera off. And at first she acts like she did, but she didn't. She lied to him, and he can see that it's still on the TV. And he's like, I can see it on the TV. She finally, like, fully turns the camera off and sits down in the bed next to her. And once the camera is turned off, now the TV screen on the dresser is blank. And it's like at an angle. It's not directly, we're not seeing like the full TV screen. But now this TV screen is reflecting them on the bed. So the shot does not change, but now we can see them on the bed as they are reflected through this like blank old TV screen, you know, like the curved big ass old TV. We get them having this very intimate shot of him talking about his 11th birthday and getting a little bit of a view into what his childhood was like. But that shot blew me away. I thought that was so cool.
Oh, it was incredibly done. I mean, it's something that you would expect to see like out of like a like master director who's been at their craft for like decades and decades. And just to see like Charlotte Wells and like her team that she worked with, like just have such great directing of performances and blocking and just pacing through the scene.
Yeah.
It was beautiful.
Yeah. The blocking is out of this world. Really impressed with the cinematography in this whole movie.
Also, I dig Calum's moves. You know,
I liked his move too.
At the start of that scene and throughout the movie, Kalen's shaking the hips and shaking the booty. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, his dancing is clearly a very big part of the movie because, you know, we get all these scenes intercut of, it's really like flashy scenes of adult Sophie seeing someone who appears to be potentially your father in like what looks to be like a rave or something, dancing his heart out. More on that, the content of the movie, the story. Let's talk about that. I feel like we should just say it up top. Spoiler alert, if you want to watch the movie and you don't want to be spoiled, maybe pause here. I think kind of knowing might not harm the experience too much because I think it might just enhance it, but it is heavily implied, if not outright stated in the movie, that after the events of this vacation, Sophie's father either takes his own life or through some, you know, indirectly takes his own life potentially. I think it's pretty implicit that he's intending to take his own life. We do see a brief cut of a note he's written her that says, I'm sorry. And, you know, I'll always remember you or always remember me or something like that.
Yeah. And at that moment, he's like breaking down completely. And
yeah.
Like crying through. And it's a really rough scene, but yeah. And then pretty much the movie's cut with between past and present, whether it's like the imagined memories or adult Soul, like looking at the footage that she recorded on the vacation, it's her clearly like just dealing with that trauma and reflecting back and like thinking about what it meant for her to like know her like father and like kind of putting those pieces together. It's really well done, especially as it bounces back and forth between like past and present, leading up into like even the eventual end where you see on how like, by the time that the footage like ends, there's just a really amazing shot where like it's pretty much Calum just closing the camcorder and then just, you know, pretty much exiting stage and turning right back into a hallway that leads into the rave that, like, I guess just is like a perpetual memory that maybe Soph has and always sticks with her. That's at least my interpretation, in that the rave isn't actually happening.
My interpretation of that is that, because we also find out that she has a baby. And also, ooh, spoiler alert, she is in a relationship with a woman.
Yeah.
You mentioned that she spies at one point in the movie that the two men kissing, perhaps foreshadowing that her own queer experiences. It's unclear, like, the nature of her relationship with this woman, whether they are, like, in a committed relationship, married or whatever, or if this, like, she's a single mom who's, like, hooking up. It's unclear. But she has a son, a baby, and my interpretation of it was that at a rave, she sees someone dancing in a way that reminds her of her father, and she's probably in this mindset of thinking about her dad because she's recently had a kid, and that causes her to go back and watch the video she has of her dad from this experience, this the camcorder that they took to the vacation. And like, this whole thing is just kind of her reflecting on that. And the rave scene to me, like, that was my interpretation, was like, she was at a rave. She saw somebody, cause you can barely see at the rave. Like there's like a strobe happening,
strobe lights.
And, like the kind of emotional resonancy of that brought her back to thinking about her dad. That was my interpretation, but like, regardless, a deeply, deeply affecting movie. And this is what inspired me to like go check and see, was this autobiographical? And the answer is kind of. Charlotte Wells describes the movie as, I think, emotionally autobiographical is what she said. As far as I can tell, there's a fantastic interview with her in The Guardian. The Guardian picked After Sun as its movie of the year in 2022. And I understand why. You know, obviously, Everything Everywhere All at Once won the Best Picture at the Oscars, and that is a fantastic movie. But this is just like a very, it's kind of the opposite of Everything Everywhere All at Once. It's like one very specific, and yet at the same time, it's also very family oriented. It's just about the ways that our family fucks us up and everything. But it's like a very zoomed in specific experience of this daughter and her father. But anyway,
last experience at that.
What's that?
Last experience.
Yes.
That she has with her father.
Yes. This interview in The Guardian is fantastic. There's a lot of great pull quotes from it. It seems pretty clear that her own father died when she was young, likely took his own life. She does have camcorder memories of him, but they're very different. I think she says she's got 40 minutes of them playing chess and you can't even see their faces because the video is just pointing at the chessboard. And she also mentioned, and I thought this was really good, let me see if I can find it. This is Charlotte Wells. It's funny hearing people describe it as my memory, because that it truly is not. The events that were in the script that were closely based on a conversation or an interaction, many of them aren't in the final film. I think that's because I am keen to serve the film and not my own past, and whatever I'm exercising with my own past is still the core of the film. The emotion of the film and the grief expressed is mine, and that's a really easy thing to admit because, as I said, this to me was a form of expression, and that is what I was ultimately expressing. But in terms of did this happen or was I on this holiday, the answer is no. I've started to push more against autobiography the more I see people inclined to draw a one-to-one relationship with me in the film. When you watch something, you immediately look up, is this the creator? True, I immediately did that. But I have a very different take on that impulse now. I just thought it was really, really cool how she's like, yeah, this is, a lot of this is pulled directly from my life, or the emotional core of it is, but it's a movie. And I wanted to make a movie, you know, I didn't want to tell my own story. So she probably, some of the more autobiographical elements, it sounds like she pulled out because they didn't serve the film. And I think it shows, because I think the movie is really tight, really well scripted, really well shot. I mean, it's just a great movie. I don't have anything more intelligent than that, I think.
I don't think I really would have anything more intelligent to add as well, but it's just an amazing package of a film. And I know we've hit from things on performances to the content, the story, and the way it was shot. I gotta ask you, what were your thoughts about the score and the music? Because that shit really hit me. Not only was the score so riveting, the use of like David Bowie's Under Pressure.
Oh my God.
Especially in like the rave scene, and it was like really hitting like kind of like this like amazing like pumping moment. And like I started like kind of like I had to catch my breath at one point. Like it just like drew me in, and it was just like so captivating.
Oh, I was crying. I was fully crying. I also don't, I, like, have I never listened to that full song before? Because there was like verses happening. I mean, they obviously changed it because we hear the lyrics from Under Pressure, but the score kind of fades in, and we've got this more orchestral music underneath the lyric, the song, David Bowie's vocals, right?
Yeah. And also they chop up the song too.
Okay.
So they do change it, and they pause it, and the score comes in too, and they definitely manipulate it a bit, which makes it really powerful and effective use.
Yeah. Yeah. It was really cool. The score was really interesting. There was a brief moment in the film where there was a really seemingly out of place song when Sophie was just hanging out at the pool. I can't remember what it was, but all of a sudden I was like, am I watching a Mary-Kate and Ashley movie? It was some girl power rock song, very 90s ska.
I think I know what you're talking about. I was all for it. Why not?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it too, but it was just whoa, this was so discordant from the rest of the movie. Because also hiding in this movie, hiding in this emotionally resonant film about a father and a daughter is just a great little girl hanging out at the beach movie. I mean, we get a lot of scenes of her, you know, obviously she's watching a lot of, like you said, she's watching a lot of teenagers and even adults, having these intimate and occasionally sexual experiences, and she's 11. So she's clearly kind of reaching that age where she is starting to have those feelings as well. And those parts of the movie I thought worked also.
I think so too. Whether she was hanging out with teenagers or Michael on the bikes, the game bike.
What a homie.
Put in the coins and they would try to beat each other. It was so endearing and just so nice to see, especially her connect with the world beyond just her father.
I loved Michael, her little friend that she makes and eventually kisses. Unproblematic Michael. He's just a homie, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, Michael did put hands to try to scare her as a joke at first, but he quickly learned. I think going forward, Michael didn't do that to people probably.
That's true. That's right. He did have that one moment where it was Michael, what are you doing? You know, he's just trying to play a boy prank. And it's you can't be doing that shit.
Yeah, you can't be doing that, Michael. Come on now.